Blog Talk Radio.
So my initial review of that was just basically, if you don't mind that it's 75 or 80% different from the book, then Ready Player One is pretty much... Wait, that might be spoilery. I shouldn't say it. Oh, hello, Nats Town. I didn't realize the show had started. Welcome to Nats Nightly Weekly. This is our second episode of the season. Nationals just wrapped up a 4-5 road trip, 11-14 overall in the year, 5.5 games out in the East. But they have injuries, and they'll come back, right, Doghouse? Please tell me so.
Yeah. I've been wailing and gnashing my teeth like most other Nats fans do most of the time, certainly this season. But I managed to drag myself back to the updated playoff projections over on FanGraphs. And don't worry, kids. We still have more than a 50% chance of winning the division, according to projections. Not much more
math.
Than 50%. But more than 50%. It's a little grim to be looking at the Nats being projected right now to end the season with 87 wins and win the division by one game. That certainly wasn't what we were hoping for at the start of the season.
I think somebody mentioned on the site earlier this week they just have to play like 20 games over 500 the rest of the way to catch up to everyone. It should be fine.
Yeah,
that's assuming everyone keeps the pace, which I think Mark Zuckerman just noted too. As good as everyone thinks the Mets are this year, I think they're like 4-7 after starting the season 11-1. So I don't expect these teams to be doing what they're doing right now all season, but they could surprise everyone. And Nationals are coming off the road trip, as I mentioned, which started well enough. 2 wins over the Mets and blew game 3 when they had a chance to sweep there. They dropped 2 of 3 in L.A. Those were all pretty tightly contested games. Dropped 2 of 3 in San Francisco, managed to salvage a series finale out there. I'm trying to take some solace in the fact that the offense picked it up in the finale, but given what we've seen over the last few weeks, I tend to think that it might have been more about San Francisco's pitching than it was about the Nats offense coming through. They all seemed to come through at once, which would be pretty coincidental, and Samardzija was out of there early. The bullpen was kind of put upon, basically, because he couldn't make it too far into the game, but dazzling offense yesterday, 15 runs, 18 hits. I think 14 of those runs came on 2-out hits, which is something the Nationals haven't been able to do so far. So a positive note on the end there, not the greatest road trip, but ended on a high note. Got a little bit of offense from some of the backups that were in the Aaron finale, Andrew Stevenson and a few other guys really picked it up. So ends on a high note, at least, even if it wasn't the best road trip.
Yeah, it's nice to we can look at the bookends of the West Coast swing and just forget about everything that happened in the middle. Then it's actually not so bad. Your point is well taken about the Giants pitching when you consider that the Nats scored 2 runs in that series on bases loaded walks. So, you know, this is not necessarily indicative of the highest quality relief corps out there. And good for Andrew Stevenson having, what was it, the 4 hits and a walk on one day. But again, a lovely performance from someone who is a fifth outfielder until someone else gets healthy. We need to get the regulars back in the lineup here. I'm looking here at the list of offensive production from the Nats hitters. And 2 of the top 4 are people who have been out for more than half the season.
That's not too positive. I did think it was funny yesterday in a interview on 106.7 The Fan with the Sports Junkies. Rizzo was talking about all the injuries and said, you know, we don't really blame the injuries, but here are all of our injuries. And they definitely are missing some key players here. Adam Eaton sidelined, Anthony Rendon with the bruised foot, Daniel Murphy still coming back from surgery. Brian Goodwin, who was filling in for Eaton, he goes down with a wrist injury. He's down in Florida now and still feeling pain in his wrist, apparently, when he swings. Rizzo also said Victor Robles, the top prospect, would likely be playing left if he wasn't injured. He hyperextended his elbow. Luckily, didn't do him any more damage than that, but he's still going to miss about a couple months, most likely. So I hope he didn't hear Rizzo's comments, which are just salt in the wounds, essentially, if you're sitting on the sidelines knowing that you'd be playing in the majors right now. They've got a few relievers out. Some regulars were underperforming. It's all, you know, it's a perfect storm, basically, to have them 11-14 so far. I know everyone wants to see that this is feeling like 2015 or whatever years they didn't make the postseason after they won 4 of 6 in the last four in the last 6 years. There's a good argument to make that all the things will be better when they're healthy, but we've heard that all before. They need to get those guys on the field, Eaton, Rendon, and Murphy. That's a big chunk of your lineup that's unavailable right now.
Yeah, it's really tough to have to sit here and say, well, look, when things get better, things will be better, but things haven't gotten better yet. So it's going to be tough here watching the Nats without Eaton, Rendon, Murphy in the lineup, watching Ryan Zimmerman hit into double plays at critical moments. That said, there are certainly some bright spots. Severino has certainly had some good ABs and been doing a good game behind the plate. Maybe the competition and the time off has been better for Matt Wieters, who is actually merely somewhat below average so far this season, as opposed to absolutely horrible like he was last season. And Michael A. Taylor is coming through in some big spots too. It's always fun to watch the speed game now.
The competition for stolen bases is fun to watch so far. Michael Taylor still striking out a little bit too much. He's really scaring me at the beginning of the season, so I'm glad to see him pick it up over the last couple games. He had a good road trip, was hitting some balls hard and trying to stay positive with all these things. And speaking of positive, Bryce Harper still tied for the NL lead in home runs with 8, leads the NL in walks. I think he has 32 now. He has 11 more than the number 2 person in walks in the National League. He's 4th in OBP, 3rd in OPS. I have a little issue with the Nationals, who always list where Harper's ranked in OBP and slugging percentage and then add OPS after that as if it's not just a combination of the two. But I digress. But Harper went 5 for 27, 1 home run, 12 walks, 5 Ks on the 9-game road trip. He did face some pretty tough pitching like the rest of the Nationals did, if we're looking for excuses for everyone. DeGrom, Wheeler, and Matt's in New York. Kershaw, Ryu, and Wood in L.A., which obviously those are 3 lefties on Harper and 3 decent lefties who gave him some trouble. Block in San Francisco, 7 lefties in 9 games. Didn't see a whole lot of right-handed pitching on this trip, but he's taking those walks. I don't know if this is like a Joe Maddon writ large sort of thing where he's struggling because he's not getting any pitches to hit. We've discussed Ryan Zimmerman behind him. Teams avoiding Harper basically and getting Zimmerman and challenging him. Zimmerman's heating up a little bit. If he keeps doing so and they get some of the other bats back in the lineup, it might make a difference for Harper, but slowing down a little bit after a good start by Harper, I still think he's going to have a pretty big year here, and he keeps taking his walks and getting on base if nothing else.
Yeah, baseball is a game of streaks. Harper's going to go hot and cold, but if people keep pitching him carefully, he'll wait for his moments. He hasn't had so many big ones in the last week, but you know, his walk to strikeout ratio has actually fallen to slightly under 2-to-1. His walk percentage is now slightly less than Michael A. Taylor's strikeout percentage at 28 versus 31. I think he's on his way to a very nice year here in terms of offensive production. So I'm not going to be too worried about people trying to pitch around him. Once people get healthy and the lineup gets filled out a little bit more, there's going to be fewer places to hide from Harper as a starter. So we'll see him get more chances. And quite frankly, I'm a little surprised people aren't challenging him a little bit more, because he will get into the mode of swinging and strike out a lot more than he has. He's willing to spit on a pitch if it's outrageous enough or close. He will swing at a ball if it is close enough, but most of them are just not close enough for him right now. When he's being pitched around, I think with a little bit more depth in the lineup, people will go after him a little bit more. We'll see the K's come up, but we'll also get to see some more outrageous rockets, I hope.
And broken bat ones, hopefully, too, because still not quite sure how that ball went out, even though I now have seen videos of Barry Bonds and a few other people do the same thing. Still impressive when you see it. Some of the bad news from the road trip. Sean Kelly, pitcher I like personally as a guy, he seems like a good guy out there. He wears a horse head, and who doesn't love that? But on to the DL, he joins them too. Ulnar nerve irritation. I've been of the opinion essentially that ever since, what was it, 2006 postseason, when he was out there at the end with the nerve issue in his elbows, that he couldn't feel his finger at the ball, which is probably kind of dangerous when you're a pitcher. He leaves the game the other night, lands on the DL. Rizzo and Davey Martinez have both talked about the sixth inning or the bridge to the back of the bullpen being an issue for this team right now, which we've seen once the starter's out of there and before they get to the big three, they've had some issues. Healthy Kelly, I think, could have fit there, even though his durability, as I mentioned, definitely a question, because I basically wonder if he's been healthy since that issue. He's got bone chips in there. Every once in a while, they move around and hit on the nerve, as Rizzo explained yesterday. They said they're going to handle him carefully. They tried to do it. It's still an issue. Rizzo also said we need to find a bridge to that seventh inning in the sixth inning. He said, I think some candidates have emerged that are going to help us. Looking at the 25-man roster, Carlos Torres, Trevor Gott, Austin Adams, not exactly some wiped-out pitcher there. Even though I really like what I've seen from Trevor Gott. If nothing else, the movement on his pitches has been pretty impressive so far. He's still throwing in mid to high 90s. I like his arm. Not too sure about Austin Adams. Tendency to walk a lot of batters. Carlos Torres is a veteran who could give them some innings there, but I think that's an issue in there. I think it's been an issue. Kelly going down, if he had stayed healthy, I think could have fit that role. But what do you do if you're the Nationals going forward? Is this Matt Weirich on our site was writing about going out there and finding some cheap middle relievers to fill those holes. But what do you think the Nationals do now that Kelly's out of the mix?
Well, I think that's, I mean, you cross your fingers for someone emerging from the minors, and I'm not sure where I see it in the depth there, or you go out and get somebody, because really the bridge to the seventh inning is the starter, and this is a combination of that softness at the bottom of the rotation that we've talked about last week, that you need to get production out of those four and five spots in the rotation, and that's the starter making it through six, so that this is less of an issue. And you can either use the big three or you can use more of your pitchers and match up and concentrate more of your available relief effort into a smaller amount of outs and maximize your chance of getting through there without giving up runs. You know, this is not the nuclear rocket brain surgery here. It's just, you know, the bottom of a rotation fall is not terrible, but it falls off pretty sharply as you go from Max Scherzer to Jeremy Hellickson, who, what a pleasant surprise for a low end pickup at the bottom of the rotation. If you need one of those two, either the middle relief or the bottom starters, to give you a little bit more production than we've gotten. And you combine that with some of the Nats' bad luck on injuries and run sequencing, and when they score their runs, and you end up with the current not fun to watch situation.
Yeah, the one guy in the minors that I did have my eye on was Wander Suero, added to the 40-man roster this past winter. He's been around for a while. He put up good numbers the last couple of years. I think he's 26 years old now, so a little old to not have debuted at this point, but he was dealing with some injury issues. I was just Googling around. All I can see is that he had a side issue, which, you know, could be oblique, could be anything. They're not giving much detail from what I've seen, but he's been back for a few games now. He's made three appearances so far at Syracuse, gave up three runs the first time, two scoreless after that. I think he's a guy, if the bullpen struggles continue, I wouldn't be surprised if he was brought up and you add him to the 40-man, mm-hmm. and obviously you're going to use him at some point, so I wouldn't mind seeing him come up and get a look more than anything, just because other than spring training, I haven't had an opportunity to watch him too much, and I kind of want to see what he has, what I've seen in spring training I've liked, but maybe that's one possibility from within the system. You also talked about the fifth starter. We should also mention A.J. Cole traded again. I'm sure they're going to reacquire him soon, just like last time. Rizzo told the sports junkies this week his stuff didn't play up like we thought it would out of the bullpen. When you get out there and you're giving up runs and you're not helping yourself or your teammates, we thought it was time to make a roster move. Obviously, he had no options left, so he was exposed. They ended up making a trade, but the Yankees, player to be named later, or cash considerations. It was reported as only cash considerations, so I'm not sure if there's just some he was speaking extemporaneously and misspoke, or if the possibility of a player to be named later is there. It hurts the depth, sort of, to lose Cole. He was giving up hard contact and home runs, so Hellickson filling in that spot now. Below him, Rizzo name-checked Austin Voth, who has a 0.96 ERA, 2.76 FIP, 0.96 walks per nine, 12.96 K per nine at 18 2/3 so far. Also mentioned Eric Fetty, one of the top right-handers in the organization behind Helixson, if Helixson doesn't keep improving. I liked Helixson in that second start in L.A. I still think there's a ceiling on him. He's probably a good fit in that fifth spot if he can stay healthy, but the depth isn't too big down there either. I asked Rizzo this winter about that. If I framed it as some names that fans in the nation's capital can follow if they want to know who might be coming up. He named two of their draft picks from last winter, last June, so I didn't see that as too much of a positive response as to the depth. But Voth is back up after a rough year last year. Fetty is healthy. He was throwing hard in spring training, so there's some depth there if they need to go there. But not going to be A.J. Cole to kick around anymore.
Yeah, it hurts to lose the depth, but like you said, he was out of options. He's not doing anyone any help being on the roster. So you exchange him for immature or struggling pieces that are down in AAA right now, and it's really not too much difference. Helixson, as you pointed out, perfectly serviceable in his last start. The only problem being that he's not giving you the innings. And if you're struggling in the middle relief, you're going to have that black hole between the good part of the bullpen and where your starter runs out of gas.
I don't want to just basically rehash Rizzo's entire interview with the Sports Junkies, but a once-a-week thing, he tends to talk about a lot of stuff. He talked about the fact that when you're playing with a depleted roster like they are, you can't make the same mistakes you maybe could when you're at full strength and can make up for a lot of it. Talked about the speed on the base paths, which is something we mentioned. He said that's part of our DNA. We're able to manufacture runs by running the bases aggressively. Michael A. Taylor and Trey are great base stealers. Eaton, when he's in the lineup, can do the same, though with his injuries to his legs, I'd prefer he probably didn't this year just to keep him as healthy as possible. But he said we should have a team that runs the bases very well, manufacture runs, but we don't want to run into outs. We want to stay aggressive and do things to push the envelope and make other teams worry. We saw Davey Martinez has shown a love of the safety squeeze so far, which is a little different for national teams. I think he's doing it a little too often at this point. Pretty much every time there's runners on first and third, he seems to be going for it. That's going to get picked up in the scouting reports pretty quickly. But we've seen the Nationals run into a few outs in close games that really have cost them, and you just can't be making those mistakes. They have a good team, some guys that can run, but you have to also be smart out there on the base paths, or you're going to end up hurting yourself.
Yeah, I think here we can just hope that Davey is watching and learning. He's worked for some very clever people who probably taught him how to watch and learn. So I think right now, much as I'm not the biggest fan of bunting, there's a place for it. And if people are going to give you the squeeze play, take it until they stop giving it to you. It was especially gratifying. What was it? I think Turner put one down against in that first game in the Dodgers series, and no one covered first. So you got a single out of it too. That's putting pressure on the other team and making them make mistakes. It's not going to work every time, but it's a way to get some runs when you're struggling to sequence your hits and score with people in scoring position, and maybe latch on to some of those intangibles that we can't measure with stats, and get some confidence into the team and just do something entertaining for the fans. Not that that should be the driving force, because ultimately winning is the most entertaining thing of all. But the Nats haven't been running into any dumb outs last week, so that's a third of the season, so they must be definitely improving.
I mentioned 11-14 as they come home. I think it's a 10-game road trip. I didn't count the games when I was just looking at the schedule to see who they're playing, but it doesn't get much easier just because they're coming home. Arizona 17-7 coming in, first place in the NL West. Pittsburgh 14-11, two games out in the Central. And then you got Philadelphia 15-9, a half game out in the NL East so far. I think that might be one of the bigger surprises around baseball. It isn't getting as much coverage. They're home. They're off of that road trip. Unfortunately for the Nationals, they come home for those 10 games and then go right back to San Diego and Arizona, which is kind of brutal. But They're going to be home for the next week plus. You got to start picking up some games here, get closer, get back to 500, and then start making up some games in the division. They got a nice matchup with the Phillies there where they can chip away a little bit.
Against the number two team in the division that's currently, what, six games over 500? I don't know. Strength of schedule, we're kind of getting hosed here. Yeah, there are some real situations here where teams have been over and underperforming in weird ways so far in the division. I can point to where the Nationals have had a lot of offense that hasn't worked out because it's happened at the wrong time in the game. It hasn't happened with people on base, or it's happened too much in one game to completely overdetermine that 15-2 win against the Giants. But the talent is there. They're producing well despite the gaps in the lineup and on the roster because of all the injuries they've had so far. Things could turn around. There's plenty of baseball left to play in this season. The weather is turning around. So I intend on this next homestand to get out to the ballpark and enjoy myself. So I'm starting tomorrow night.
I think I have to wait until the middle of the month. I think that's the next time I get a chance to go down there. I'm eyeing that Yankees series, though. That would be a good look to get down there for the next one. Strasburg versus Zach Godley. I think that's his first name, Zach Godley, tomorrow night. If the Nationals don't win right away, I got his name right, it's Zach Godley. At least Max Scherzer's pitching in 4 days, so he can stop whatever sort of losing streak they've built up at that point. But 7:05 tomorrow night, 17-7 D-backs in town against the 11-14 Nationals. I think that's it for this week. We'll try to go out on a positive note. Strasburg's definitely going to shut the D-backs down. That's nightly, weekly. Oh, yeah. It's brought to you by federalbaseball.com. Any closing thoughts there before we take off, Doghouse?
I think you should stop jinxing is what I think you should do.
There are no such things as jinxes, or so I've been told, in spite of what the jinx fact says for the federal baseball. We'll talk to you next week. We'll try to find a day when the Nationals aren't playing and do this again. Thank you for joining me, Doghouse. This is Nats Nightly Weekly signing off. Talk to you soon.
Go Nats.